runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 41 with guest Dominic Beyer, recorded Wednesday, January 16th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. And with me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, sir.
It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, we're back in. It's the new year. Things are happening. I'm having a good time, and the show's doing really well. So it's been a lot of fun, and lots more coming.
Yeah, we've got 40 shows under our belt. This is, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is number 41.
This is indeed 41, and much more to come. And
I'll be turning 41 years old here in, never mind, in a couple months.
Me too. But I'm going to leave that alone. I got an email.
You did.
From Mark Boyle. I've got to admit, when you guys have superstar shows like Steve Riley and Kim Tripp and Paul Randall, the half-hour format is just way too short. But you guys are doing a great job, and being a guy who only listens to podcasts with Carl's voice these days, I have to admit that Greg is growing on me.
Oh,
of course, he's referring to Carl Franklin over on .NET Rocks. But
well, my voice is certainly nowhere near as vibrant, mellow, and smooth as Carl's. And, so I'm glad that I'm growing on you. I'm going to take that as a compliment.
Yeah, that is a compliment. Another 100 shows, you'll sound just like Carl.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say. It's a face for radio and a voice for print.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I've used that line. He goes on to say, more hypervisor would be interesting. I'd love to hear someone come on and talk about the new server hardware that's coming down from Dell and Hewlett Packard and so on, and what the future holds for the data center.
You know, me too, actually. So hypervisor and all the new stuff there and everything around virtualization and some of the new technologies, I have to be honest, I'm not completely up to speed on. And I always enjoy, we've had a few shows here and there where I'm learning stuff for the first time as we're doing an interview. I really enjoy that process too, but I need to get up to speed on some of that stuff. And so there's a little self-interest for you. How you like that?
But there's a few things that I'm definitely thinking about. Virtualization, hypervisor for Server 2008, certainly part of that equation.
Right.
A lot of the new hardware that's coming along is very interesting. I think high-performance computing is a big deal. The greening of the data center. I actually got caught up speaking on a panel about this topic, so I think it'd be interesting to bring that in. But it's not just about what we like. If you've got some specific topics you want to hear about, send us an email, info@runasradio.com, and we'll make it happen for you.
Right.
Mark finishes off with, now the big question I need to answer is, do I go to the first week or the second week of TechEd US now that they're split?
Both.
Like you, I've got my feet squarely planted on both sides of the fence.
Right.
But I can't take 2 weeks off.
That is one of the things about splitting TechEd up, as they have in Europe, into two different weeks, one for IT and one for developers, that those people that do bridge that gap, there's a little bit of a quandary there for those people. I think I sort of have to weigh which one do I fall, if I'm sitting on the fence and the wind blows, which side of the fence do I fall on, right?
Well, and I'm definitely going to both weeks, as I'm going to be doing .NET Rocks all the first week and Run As Radio all the second week.
That's true. But I'd be willing to bet that that our friend here has budget constraints to deal with and really probably has to make decisions. So I don't know. What do you think? You know, you've spent a lot of time at a lot of tech eds. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it totally depends on your interest. I know that, you know, the reason they split them is it was becoming heavily IT. I don't think the devs were getting enough love.
Right. The devs are really looking for, how do I build this, and what's some of that underlying, you know, nitty gritty new, not new tools only, but also, you know, what's some of the new ways of doing things and what's new in the languages and all those things. Whereas the IT guys and the IT guys and gals, the people, are really more focused on infrastructure and, you know, of course, there's a lot of overlap on both sides.
Yes. Well, and both have new tools coming because there's Studio 2008, which is now shipping. So, you know, TechEd US is going to be on the dev side. There'll be a lot about that. And Server 2008 Absolutely. Will be out by then, too. So there'll be lots of interesting stuff on that side, on the IT side. I think the IT show will be bigger. There'll physically be more people there. But right. I think they're both going to be great shows.
Well, you know, maybe that's one way to help gauge it. Do you think is if you spend a lot of your time really focused on studio, Visual Studio, then, and thinking about things in those terms, then, you know, maybe the dev week, if you really think in terms of infrastructure and server and deployment, then maybe the IT side.
Right. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Dominic Beyer is an internationally recognized expert for the security of .NET and Windows applications. He supports companies worldwide with design and implementation of security features in their software as a security consultant at ThinkTecture. As one of the few developer security Microsoft MVPs, he works directly with various security teams in Redmond. One of the offsprings of this cooperation is the book Developing More Secure Microsoft ASP.NET 2.0 Applications, which quickly became the book for ASP.NET security. Dominic also leads the security and WCF curriculum at DevelopMentor. You can find a wealth of security-related resources as well as conference slide decks and tools and sample code at Dominic's blog at www.leastprivilege.com. Ah, great domain name, Least Privilege.
Yeah, I was really surprised that it just wasn't taken by someone else. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. What a great catch. And that's very much a developer's term, working in security, this idea of working in least privilege. Because, of course, naturally, especially developers, they're always operating as administrator.
Yes, they do.
And they, well, of
the
course.
Bane of our, one of the many banes of our existence, right?
So I guess the topic today is ASP.NET security. After all, you did write the book.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Took me 14 months of my life.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, you don't see a lot of solo author book efforts anymore. Most books are, you know, 6, 8, 10 people working on it. So for you to push out the whole thing on your own, that's spectacular.
Yeah. I think it was just, a story I had in my heart. I just had to write down at one point just to get rid of it.
So you don't have to worry about waking up in the middle of the night thinking about it.
Exactly, and I can forget the details now.
Well, and it's one of the interesting truths of writing books is that it forces you to go through every one of those little details. I've never known anything better than when I've done the research necessary to write a book on it.
Exactly. I mean, I really enjoy the time. I mean, living in Reflektor very pretty much like 14 months in a row. And now it's written and it's fine.
So we should start at the top here. I guess you're telling me it is actually possible for me to build secure ASP.NET 2.0 apps.
Oh yeah, it is possible. Not with, let's put it like this, not with the default settings.
Oh, right. Yes.
So, I think ASP.NET is a phenomenally good and robust and secure environment, but still, it's you still have to know some things to make it really secure, or as secure as possible, at least. Yeah.
Now, where does this security really start at deployment, or do I have to start at development?
You have to start in the design phase.
Okay,
before development.
That's, I guess, one of the main points I'm talking about is that security is. Security is a feature, okay?
Right.
So it should have the same priority as you that you need a nice UI or that you need performance. It's just another feature of your application, and you have to design as such. So it's impossible to bolt on security at, like, you know, these typical consulting gigs where you get called in like 2 weeks before deployment and say, okay, can you now make it secure?
Yeah. Can you give us a nice spray coating of security over top of this?
Yeah, exactly.
put your name on this line and tell us everything is fine.
Yeah.
No matter what,
yeah,
you find out.
That's not possible. Okay, so yeah, you have to design for security, and it's sometimes even impossible to make it secure with a given design.
So, right. So there are some inherently insecure designs.
Exactly. I mean, if your whole application is based around, that you store your prices in hidden fields, then you have to change your design, right?
Yes. And if you're doing that, stop it.
Exactly.
It's a great place to start the conversation, because it's really where any project or any piece of software or infrastructure starts, is in the design phase. You know, you have a set of requirements for a customer, you know, internal or external customer, and then you have to meet those needs. So talk about what it takes to do design really well from a security standpoint.
Okay. So I think, first of all, you need a lot of experience in the area, that you immediately, at least in my case, I immediately feel like that something is fishy here if I see a feature. Yeah. I guess one thing, and that's the reason why I took this domain name, is that one thing I did for the last 10 years of my life is try to live in a least privileged environment. Yeah. Because I experienced that this simple thing can, you know, mitigate a lot of attacks, or at least a lot of attacks that really hurt you in the end.
Our show is called runasradio.com, and there's sort of a relationship to a least privileged, application basis there. But for the people that may not be really familiar with the concept of least privilege, maybe you could explain that briefly for those that need a good understanding.
Sure. Yeah. So the idea is that least privilege means that every user or every piece of code in your system should only have the privileges it really requires to run, and nothing more. And hardliners would even say at a given point of time. So this basically means that, for example, as a desktop guy, you typically don't need admin privileges to read your emails or, you know, to browse the internet. It's actually much more secure if you refuse to have admin privileges.
Right.
And the reason why many people are running with admin privileges is that some applications just break if you are not admin on the box. And the reason why they break is because the developers who wrote the application were running as admin and did never test in a normal user environment, for example. So that's one of the main reasons why I recommend to every developer to run as a normal user, just to experience what it is like running as a normal user and deciding software which works fine in that environment. Same for server apps, yeah. Typically, your server application doesn't need to have local system privileges, yeah. So,
right.
Again, it is really very helpful from a security point of view to run the application with just a minimum set of privileges, because if something goes wrong, then the amount of damage is limited, yeah. So the best example of that was when, you know, back in the days in Windows 2000, when IIS 5 was running as local system, every single code defect was leading to a full system compromise. For example,
you take the whole machine down.
When they switched to IIS 6, they went down to a network service, and even if you didn't have that major code problem in IIS 6, if somebody would find a buffer overflow in IIS 6, he would end up with network service, which is not really hurting the system anymore. So it's a very, very important principle of design.
It's an interesting thought, just to say the idea that at the design point of an application, we need to have our security guy there right away. But the point that, as a security guy, the first thing I want to recommend to my developers is stop running as administrator while you develop.
It depends on which type of application you are developing, okay? So what I say is don't run as normal admin just for running as normal admin's sake. It's basically run or test the application in the security context it will run in production. Okay?
Sure. Right.
So if you're writing a WinForms app or a WPF app, then typically this app won't run as admin when it's deployed, okay?
Right.
So you want to figure out what's going on in the environment it will be deployed to. Okay? So, for example, one of my favorite rants is Visual Studio web server, Cassini, yeah?
Yes.
So basically, what happens is, if you are testing and writing your code in Cassini, which is a stripped down version of it's kind of off a web server which runs from the desktop. So basically what happens is that you're testing A, your application under a different web server as it will run in production, and B, combined with the fact that people are running as admin, this web server will run as admin, so the application will run as admin, and in during development, it will just work. Okay? I've answered so many emails or did so many consulting gigs where people said, like, it was working fine until we deployed to IIS.
Right. Because you actually, so you changed security context and you changed operating applications. You're now running on a different web server.
Yeah. I mean, given the ASP.NET hosting model, they are like 99% similar. Yeah, like IIS and Cassini, how apps behave.
Right.
But when you change the security context, things start to break. And what's the typical response, which is the worst response you can ever do or get, is that people have to deploy. It runs as local system. It doesn't work as network service, so just run as local system, right? It's just an easy switch to make in IIS configuration, right?
But it defeats the whole purpose.
Totally. So I'm basically saying don't run as non-admin, or don't run in the target security context just for me. Do it for yourself, yeah?
Yes.
Make deployment day less painful.
So let's talk about sort of where this meets reality, because this is a debate that's been had over and over again, and it's hard to come up, I think, with a solid answer. But really the question is, I mean, many of us in the industry already have applications where this problem already exists. So given that, what if we can't start from design phase and build everything in and do it just right? How do I fix an existing problem? I mean, how do we get from here to there? Where here is we have existing problems, and there is really solving this problem of execution privilege, you know, on the system.
Okay, so you mean basically what can we do if we have an existing application and we want to add security to it, or?
Right. Or, you know, if we want to, I mean, even if we just take, you know, an existing application, we can also talk about the broader security picture, but more specifically is, if I have an application which right now only runs in admin mode, I'm thinking about this from the perspective of the IT guy who's responsible for the application security, the big picture in the data center.
Okay.
What are the things that this person can be thinking about? And if I'm that guy, what do I need to talk to the development teams about? What approach should I be taking to try to solve this problem?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, the good thing is that a lot of companies I've been to, they have a policy these days saying we refuse to run something in the data center which requires local system privileges, for example.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I've even seen one company where they said, like, we refuse to run fully trusted code. We're only running sandbox code. But yeah, if you have this application and you want to convince the developer to fix it, well, first of all, I would show him how his application miserably breaks under a normal account. Yeah. And there are a bunch of tools from Microsoft which can help the dev to figure out the problem. There's this tool called the Lua Analyzer, or Standard User Analyzer. I'm not sure how they call it these days. But the idea of that tool is that basically they execute every line of code twice. So basically you have two logon sessions. One is running as admin, one is running as a normal user. And they execute every line of code twice and see if it works in the admin context but breaks in the user context, then you know where the problem is in your code.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Where is that tool from?
It's from Microsoft.
Okay.
It's called Lua Buglight. Yeah, that's the name. L-U-A Buglight. It's a tool they released like 1 year ago or one and a half years ago.
Yeah, I remember they released something called the Standard User Analyzer. It was a beta when I looked at it.
The idea of that tool is to make checks if the application will run in the standard user environment, like which is forced by Vista, for example. But
gotcha.
The Lua Buglight one is really like pinpointing the specific line of code which breaks in the least privileged scenario.
Right.
Wow, what a great tool. Like, just in terms of just drilling into where does the problem lie? Because that's a real issue, is it's somewhere in the app, it does something that causes this problem.
Right.
So being able to get down and execute line by line and find the specific thing, that's very compelling.
I guess 90% of all least privilege problems come from two common things developers do. One is trying to write to a location where you don't have write access to, for example, program files.
Right.
Like the famous config or ini file in program files, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next one is trying to write to HK local machine. This, Microsoft did some testing on applications and figured out that these two things are the most common problems, yeah, and they're easy to fix.
Right, writing to the machine level of the registry and writing to system directories, essentially.
Exactly. So just change to HK current user and the profile and you are good to go, yeah?
For registry. And for directories, it's really write to the application directory. Don't write to the system directories.
No, write to the profile.
Right. Always. So you're saying always write to the registry profile?
I'm saying that that there's a specific location on the hard disk which is made for being write-enabled for the user, and that's his profile.
Right.
That's the only place on the hard disk where you can guarantee that you have write privileges, and that's how Windows is designed, right? I mean, if you want to have system-wide configuration settings, then you typically set them at deployment time, yeah?
Right.
And based on that, every user has its own config settings which go into the profile.
So let's yank this back to ASP.NET then. How does the user profile relate to ASP.NET?
Not at all. the thing is, IIS 6, version 6, doesn't load the profile with the application pool user account for performance reasons.
Right.
So basically, every ASP.NET application runs in the all users profile.
Okay.
So that has changed, by the way, in IIS 7. So in IIS 7, they load the profile of every application pool account. So you can more effectively isolate applications by just, you know, moving them to different accounts.
Yes.
But in IIS 6, the profile doesn't mean anything to ASP.NET.
Yeah, so this is just a basic problem with the way ASP.NET works, is that you pretty much are stuck with logging in on a given account.
It's IIS.
Right. And it's only in IIS 7 that we're going to be able to deal with this in a more sophisticated way.
Yes, in IIS 7, they put a lot of work into application isolation. So basically, one thing is that you have a profile, which means if you have a profile, you have your own set of X509 certificates and private keys associated with that. You have your own DPAPI keys. And they even inject a special SID in every application account, so you can actual basically files on the hard disk saying this file only application pool foo has access to.
Right.
So yeah, that's all IIS 7.
So one of the chapters in your rather heavy book that you wrote, this excellent book, has to do with deployment. And so, you know,
right,
in the data center and in production, what are some of the mistakes that people make? Sort of the classic mistakes that people make that that maybe just through listening here they can sort of learn more about or learn how to avoid.
Okay.
Specifically in deployment.
So the most common problem is that we I think you can increase the security of your application incredibly by just enabling SSL, for example. So one
sure.
common thing is that people try to find ways how to make their application secure going around SSL. And SSL is such an easy switch. Basically, you just configure something, turn it on, and you have mitigated all kinds of problems, like the eavesdropping problems, the integrity problem, the replay attack problem, the man-in-the-middle problems, the spoofing problems. Everything is mitigated by simply going to SSL. But for some reasons, companies still shy away from that, and I guess the reason for that is that certificates are still kind of black magic to a lot of admins.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, this certificate store thing, and it doesn't work, and debugging is hard in IIS if things start to break, and you know, revocation lists and all these things. It's just a complicated technology, but SSL is a tremendous increase in security, for example.
Now, fortunately, on Windows Server 2008, the new version of IIS, they're building a lot of tools in to help administrators of IIS and Windows Server actually do the debugging and do the troubleshooting. So that's a great thing.
That's goodness, yeah.
Now, what about moving the certificate endpoint outside of the web server, put it on a box at the edge of the network?
I mean, that depends on your risk model, basically. Do you want to flow that last, you know, the last piece of cable between the server and the internet is clear text in this case, yeah?
Right.
It depends on, you know, on policy, if that makes sense for you. But yeah, that's a sensible solution.
Would you also say that it simplifies things? I mean, a lot of the issues that people have with running SSL on IIS is the debugging process and just sort of managing the issues around working with the web server. So if I move the endpoint off the web server, that would seem to mitigate that in exchange for now I'm clear text on that internal mile.
Yes. So it really depends. Yeah. I mean, you have businesses where you need the end-to-end encryption, for example, which is just a requirement.
Right. Well, I think banking's like that, right?
Yeah.
Greg?
Yeah, it depends. It really depends. And there's risk models associated with it. I think that in deployment where people tend to get stuck, in my experience, is thinking that SSL, end-to-end is the only way to secure it, where sometimes SSL to the perimeter endpoint, you know, if we're talking perimeters in the classic DMZ sense, I suppose, or the proxy endpoint, there are other mechanisms, IPsec, you know, capabilities and others for connecting on the internal point. Usually this comes up when you have IT and security people that are saying, but we have to be able to do real-time analysis on all the traffic on the network, right?
Yeah.
You know, how do I do intrusion detection and intrusion prevention if I can't read the data? So what do you think about that? I mean, what are some of the other forms of deployment that can be used? The SSL is a good tool for securing, especially across the public network. What are some of the ways we can try to solve that problem on the private network?
Well, I mean, use good protocols. Yeah. If you're running in a domain, for example, yeah, then you get Kerberos support for free. And Kerberos is a really, really good protocol for securing transports. Yeah, so
sure.
DCOM, RPC, or all the other frameworks which rely on SPNego, are a good choice. WCF, for example, if you're using the internet-based bindings, uses SPNego under the covers. That's certainly a step in the right direction, yeah, of making sure that you are that you're running Kerberos in your intranet, for example. A lot of companies use IPsec, for example. That's another option. And
I mean, the overhead associated with IPsec, depending on how it's done, I mean, it can take some administrative overhead. I know another example that pops to mind is, especially for intrusion detection on web farms you can double up and offload an SSL certificate and do a read only with a copy of the SSL certificate. There's a number of very good services and devices out there, even appliances that you can just deploy in your network to, even though the traffic is encrypted, decrypt it and do analysis.
The SSL encryption is a concern because of intrusion detection. Then another popular solution would be to have a host-based data collector which sends the data on to the intrusion detection system.
Sure. There's a variety of pretty ingenious newer technologies and services and appliances and products out there that help to solve this problem. You know, one of the things that I think we tend to do is we tend to get caught in the rut of always being concerned about the problem that came up 4 years ago, and spending so much time focused on that, or even quite frankly preaching about that we fail to recognize the fact that technology keeps on moving on and there are new ways to solve these old problems.
Sure, yeah. I just brought up the SSL example because I've seen projects where people were just discussing over and over again, should we use SSL or not? And I think it's just not a question anymore. If you're dealing with sensitive data, then you have to use SSL.
Oh, absolutely. And don't get me wrong. I agree with you 101% that SSL is just an absolutely valuable and de facto standard way of solving that problem. My comments were more about the internal network. And, you know, if you have people that are saying, well, we can't do SSL because that really isn't necessarily true anymore. It is possible to get the best of both worlds if you take the time to do it.
The only excuses I've heard about not using SSL is a general misunderstanding about how it works. And also, the processing overhead that it puts onto a box. So.
Well, that's not really true. I mean,
that's really not a fact anymore.
Yeah. The bottom line is we have so much horsepower in these machines now that the cost of SSL encryption is irrelevant. Would you say then, Dominic, that as soon as we're not talking about a general public internet app, it ought to be SSL all the time?
We're talking about the general public internet app?
Yeah, if we've got an app that goes out to the world, would you make it, I mean, anything other than that should be all SSL all the time?
SSL is really the best way to secure HTTP.
So use it.
Yeah.
And to its point, it's built in. All you have to do is put the cert in place and off you go.
Exactly. And for example, something a lot of people don't know is that IS6, for example, supports crypto CPU cards you can add to the box, which offload the crypto stuff to a separate CPU.
Right. Yeah, so it's hardware encryption still in the box. It's just not eating up processors. So if that is somehow a concern, and it really shouldn't be, there is solutions to that. And also, there are appliances. If you're doing 10,000 SSL connections at once, get a box. There's dedicated hardware that'll do that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, another good example of a piece of hardware and some technology that a lot of people don't know about. They're just focused on the argument about SSL and overhead when there are solutions to all of those problems.
Okay. Pulling this back to our original discussion, we were talking about the developers. Does SSL's implementation have to enter the equation at the design phase? Is there things that developers need to know in order to be developing an app that's going to be all SSL, or can I stick it in at the end?
Well, I mean, you have to agree on some sort of data protection up front.
Right.
I mean, for example, there are protocols which rely on the data being encrypted, for example, by basic authentication, HTTP, or forms of authentication in ASP.NET, yeah? I mean, first of all, the login page is flowing clear text, username and passwords, okay? And then afterwards, we exchange that credential, the clear text one, with an encrypted cookie, okay? But still, you are transmitting clear text data. So, I just think if you are doing a web application which deals with either logons or sensitive data, you just have to use SSL. That's it. Full stop. Yeah.
And again, this sort of goes back to the design phase conversation that we started with. You know, Microsoft builds a great tool that they call the threat modeling tool that's free. You can download it and really helps you, especially in the case of web applications, really, but any application, to build a basic threat model and to basically create a document to go along with your application so that you can track and maintain as part of the development lifecycle the security components of what you're doing.
Yeah. It's a good tool.
It also, in the design phase, really helps to point out other potential improvements or flaws. I have always thought of security as a key component of quality. You don't have a quality product unless you deal with a lot of different things, and security is one of those key things.
Well, I think security is just part of quality management, yeah.
Well, and I really like the idea of putting security on the features list when you're designing the application for no other reason than then you have to force them to cross it out.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I really like about this threat modeling tool is that you don't necessarily need a security expert to start the model. So basically, just a developer knowing what's going on in the application can start creating this model, and then you can bring in a security guy later on to refine it, for example. Whereas with the classical threat modeling approach, you need the security guy up front, yeah?
I think there's two approaches to security and development and deployment. And one of those is that security is something that we do at certain, you could call them, landmarks along the way, right? Or certain checkpoints along the way. You know that, okay, well, it's time to have a security review. Oops, well, we need to bring in the security guy. I can tell you from my own experience and the experience of people I've worked with that can be painful at times because of what you miss in between those reviews. The other approach being, security is not something that we do along the way. Rather, it's the way that we do things.
Yeah.
And really building it into every component of the software development lifecycle. And that includes, you know, training your developers and your IT personnel on what good quality security really is.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, it's just that I realized that in many companies, when you give them like a classical threat modeling book, yeah, then they look at it and say, okay, oh my God, we can't do that. Yeah, it's too much stuff. We need a dedicated guy for doing that. And this threat modeling tool helps a little bit to, you know, to get started with security.
Right. Well, and certainly it's better to do something than to do nothing most of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just like the idea that a non-security guy can start the model and a security guy can work with that later on and refine it and give it back to the non-security guys to implement recommendations and all these things.
Absolutely.
I just think it's a good tool.
All right, gentlemen, we're about out of time. The book is Developing More Secure Microsoft ASP.NET 2.0 Applications, and the blog is www.leastprivilege.com. Dominic Beyer, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Dominic.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.